Today's Story Time News is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/paranormal. Over 180,000 titles to choose from on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
And we're back with the Storytime Podcast.
Dave.
How'd I do?
We have done this. I know it's been a while, but we have done this a lot. And every time I sing, and this time,
but decided. Brian, just think of it like it's a new year, a new Dave.
So, yeah, but I guess it's kind of a new podcast. Because
we started off so strong.
Yeah. Dave, all I need to tell you is welcome to the Star Time Podcast.
Hey, do you think we should do it so we're like, we can like sing together on that? All right, ready? Do exactly that again. Ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Ready?
Welcome
to the Star Time Podcast. Nailed it. Was that it, Brian? Did I do it?
It was better than it has been in a long time.
It's also the first time it's been in a long time.
You're exactly right. Hey, Dave.
Yes.
This is a Star Time Podcast. We are interviewing someone today, but just in case people are slowly finding out, we got an email just yesterday from a guy who said, hey, didn't know you guys were back. I'm happy you are.
We're back. The reason why he sent that
is because we are now doing a news podcast each day, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Called the Star Time News.
Brian, you missed a day, Wednesday.
Right, but that's today.
That is today. What is this?
This is the Star Time Podcast.
Oh, I know the names. What is the difference?
Well, the difference is the Star Time News is a daily, think of it as a newspaper.
Right.
Coming to your doorstep with paranormal news in it. And you look at it for about 20 minutes and then you put it away.
Mm-hmm.
But the Star Time Podcast, a little bit longer, a little bit more intense, because each week we will be interviewing, as we have in the past, somebody in the field of paranormal, ghost, aliens, Bigfoot, sneaker feet. That's the one I made up. I don't know.
Sounds like a hamster name.
It does. Sneaker feet. It's also going to be the name of my next album.
Okay.
But every day, we will be doing the news. On Wednesday, we will be doing the interviews.
I like it.
Is it confusing?
No, because, actually this reminds me of what, have we ever talked about maybe like getting to interview a palm reader or like some kind of like a medium of some kind?
We have not yet. I don't remember if I've reached out to one yet.
Well, but all that to say, the only thing that reminded me of that is when you said the whole thing about the news and what did you call it and whatever. But people are interested in what's going on, Bran. They don't want to hear us just talk to people about what has happened or whatnot. They want to hear what is going on right now so they can be in the know. Because sometimes our guests come on and they reference all these things that are happening. And me and you, for one, are pretty much not able to understand what they're talking about most of the time. So this is kind of a practice for ourselves.
They're always referencing stuff.
Because there's stuff going on. And if we could...
Absolutely.
I think that it'd be good for us and our listeners to be in on it too, so that we're all just in that same page of the Star Time Podcast book.
Absolutely. So, just to recap, I know it's not that confusing, but Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Star Time News. Wednesday, Star Time Podcast. That's it.
If there's one thing I know about you, Brandon, it's that you like to reiterate things that are easy to understand.
Well, I only do that because I'm used to being around you.
And see, I feel like here's the thing. Like, I knew that joke was coming. That's how good of friends we are.
Yeah, well, I just feel like
we're such good friends that I know when you're going to insult my intelligence right before you do it. Which kind of makes me mean.
I do not insult your intelligence. I insult your annoying habits. There's a difference.
But why would you explain something to me twice because I'm annoying?
No, I don't. You're missing my point.
Or am I exemplifying your main point?
Yeah, I think you are. Except this is the perfect showing of what this. Although I just did what you do, so
here we are. That?
Hey, Dave.
For what a great that are, we're back, Bran. We're back.
Yeah. This is. Remember that guy that left us the review on iTunes?
Yeah, I remember. Today you told me about it.
Well, no, a little while ago. The guy that said that we suck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think this is why.
Well, Brian, it's like we're like a sandwich. I've said this before. We're like a sandwich where the good stuff's definitely in the middle. We're like the cheap bread that cracks.
Yeah. But speaking of reviews, Dave, did you know one thing that would really help us is going on the your podcast app and leaving us a review? It's really helpful, actually.
Are you using the royal you or the actual me?
Well, have you done it?
No.
So, I guess it's both and. No, it's a both and.
Bran, we talked about this. I don't know how to rate myself.
What do you mean?
It's like that, what's that Mumford & Sons song, Little Lion Man? Rate yourself and rape yourself. And take all
take
the courage,
all the courage
I have
you
left.
Have less.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen. I can't do that. I can't.
I don't know how that even applies.
It's because, Bran, it's like, if I started to vote, like if I voted on my own talent level when it comes to podcasting, all of my courage would be just gone.
No, but you're not rating yourself. You're rating something that you're a part of. That's like saying that you're not allowed to look at your work critically.
That's exactly my point. I thought you were going to give a better example. Because today was election day, you're going to say that's like living in America and you can't vote for it.
You never look at your work critically?
I can't, Bran. I have to have a new set of eyes.
you lose your courage.
I lose my courage. It's the natural thing. It's the natural chain of events that happens. Anyways, Bran, let's just say that we're all glad to be back here, and we have, for the first time in, I guess, two months, we have a guest that was just going to be awesome because this guest is someone that struggles with something that I think we all take for granted, and that thing is sleep.
Ah, I didn't know which way you were going to go with it.
Yeah. Bran, who is it?
I think we all struggle with a lot of things. Oh, his name's Forrest Borey. And you're going to hear from Borey. I don't know why I said it by his last name, but we're going to talk to him, and we are going to try to understand exactly what sleep paralysis is.
Very a worthy interview to have.
Dave, one person out there might be wondering, well, if you guys do a news podcast every day, what's going to happen to the news section in between the awful intro banter and the interesting interview?
We talked about that, but I didn't know we were going to tell everybody.
No, I say we just kind of find out right now. So we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to...
I can't wait to find out.
Forrest Borey.
All right.
Sorry to talk about this.
Later, guys.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered what life would be like if I was able to not just read a book, but listen to a book?
Have I ever wondered about your life that way?
No, your life.
Yes, all the time.
So what's the solution?
I hear, pray tell, of something called Audible? What is that? Have you heard of it?
I have.
What is this? What is that? What is all the yammering about this? What is all the fuss about?
Yeah, so there is a lot of fuss about it because here's the thing. If you are looking for a new way to experience literature, mm-hmm. there's no other place you should go than Audible. Audible is a place that has over 180,000 books that you can listen to on the go. It's like podcasts, but longer, and you can listen to over a period of time. And I've got good news, Dave.
Tell me this news.
if you were to go on your computer and go to audibletrial.com/paranormal, you would be able to get yourselves a free, yeah, free audio book of your choosing.
Are you serious, Brian?
I could not be more for real.
How do we do it? Real. How do I do it?
Yeah, I know. You forgot. You weren't writing it down. Write it down. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Audibletrial.com slash
yeah.
Paranormal.
Wait, I wrote that down. That's all it is? That's all I got to do?
That's all it is. You get there. You click start my free trial. You sign in. Get this. With your Amazon account.
I have one of those already.
Almost everyone in the world does.
Just that easy.
And Dave, just to recap.
Because you like to do those.
Audibletrial.com/paranormal. Start your free trial from your good friends at the Starry Time. You doing this simple thing helps keep the Starry Time news and the Starry Time podcast going. So please take advantage of this free audiobook and 30-day trial. audibletrial.com/paranormal.
Give your eyes a break. Let your ears bake.
And welcome back to the Starry Time podcast. Dave, are you excited to be just in the interview portion of the podcast?
Brian, it's been so long. It feels like I'm a freed deer that's been repaired in the doctor's office, and then my leg is fixed and I'm ready to go into a grassy glen.
Did you write that down?
No.
It sounded like you were ready for that one.
Well, I always expect you to ask me, are you ready? So.
Oh, fair enough. Hey, Dave, we're excited. Tonight we have for us, Forrest Borey is his name. It sounds like a location a deer would be, but it's not. It's his name, Forrest Borey. He's a lifelong experiencer, which I'm excited to figure out exactly what that means. He's a lifelong experiencer of all things paranormal. He was also the subject of Rodney Ashner's recent documentary about sleep paralysis. That's called The Nightmare, which I believe is on the Netflix. And Forrest is currently in a production of his own documentary film exploring a traumatic but surprisingly not paranormal experience of his own, which we'll touch on later. But Forrest, welcome to the Starry Time podcast.
Thank you. Hello.
It is a pleasure to meet you and to greet you and to talk about sleep paralysis. We have not had anyone on our show yet that talks about sleep paralysis. So before we dive into it, give us a little, I don't know, some sort of definition, if you will, of what sleep paralysis exactly is.
Sure. Well, you know, you're asleep. you wake up, but something's kind of askew. You can't move. Feels like you can't breathe. Then a sort of a feeling of terror comes over you. And you want to scream and you want to run and stand up and move, but you can't move an inch, not a muscle in your body. Your whole body and voice and everything else is completely unresponsive.
And,
and then, you know, depending on the person, you eventually you get out of it, but it's quite an upsetting experience.
Dave and I were talking about this yesterday on our news podcast that we as kids kind of all have some sort of this. Like we wake up, we're scared. We feel like maybe someone's looking at us through the window or looking over our shoulder, but we can kind of snap out of it pretty quickly. So what's the biggest difference between what a lot of kids experience and what you experience?
Well, it seems right. Like you can't move, right? You just can't move. Even if you,
yeah, I mean, it's subjective. So they're both subjective things in a way. You know, when you're a kid and you get freaked out, you know, you have this subjective fear that you can sort of ease yourself out of by returning to reality. In a sleep paralysis, there really isn't any pathway back to reality. All those lines are cut off and you're just kind of stuck in this state. And quite often, not only are you stuck in the state, you're also stuck experiencing some pretty terrifying stuff. And unlike a nightmare or, again, a subjective experiencing of sort of transient fear fueled by the imagination, you can't simply will it away. You can't wake yourself up from it. And you certainly can't bring reality into the equation to sort of ease it away. Mm. It's like a hallucination. So it's very holistic in its grasp on reality. It transforms the whole thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so is this something that you've had happen to you since you were a kid? And then to follow that up, since you are a lifelong experiencer of all things paranormal, is this coupled with it in any way, or are they totally separate things?
Yeah, well, I've actually had it since I can remember, literally, in that my very first memory is a state of sleep paralysis.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so you could almost say my coming into the world was framed by this experience. I'm still in my crib. I'm laying there. I can remember the bars. I remember this window in my bedroom. And I wake up and I can't move. And there's these two, kind of beings, sort of humanoid-ish beings with these big eyes and these big inky smiles, like no teeth, like almost like a cartoon smile. Their skin is made out of what appears to be analog television static, which is something we don't get to experience anymore, but I'm sure right. You both remember it from back in the day.
Absolutely.
Or what appears to be that kind of static, and they're tickling me, and they're really enjoying it, but it's not a pleasant thing for me, obviously.
Yeah, because you weren't even able to move, right? You weren't able to...
Yeah. Yeah, and as a child, as a baby, I'm still working out how I deal with reality in general.
Sure.
I'm still working out how I deal with emotions, with needs and stuff. So it really became kind of a framing incident for my childhood and kind of what was to come, so to speak.
Right.
So I guess sleep paralysis did become my main conduit of communication with a sort of, different world,
Sure.
Something quite different than what everyone else was experiencing.
Yeah. Kind of going off of that, like it appears just in like my brief interaction and study of sleep paralysis that there's some sort of connection between the sleep paralysis and the paranormal worlds. Whether it be aliens or ghosts or whatever, somehow they're all connected. So what if, as somebody who's had a lifelong dealing with sleep paralysis, do you think that that's the case? Like, have you experienced aliens, UFOs?
Absolutely. So, growing up, I just had this terrifying experience. And I also had nightmares every single night. My bedroom itself felt off. Like something was very wrong with it. And then I think when I was around, maybe eight or 9 years old, my dad used to watch whatever movie wise and he'd let me watch whatever. And he was, watching, I think, Communion on HBO. Are you guys familiar with Communion?
No.
It's based on sort of a novel, but semi-autobiographical. I guess it is technically an autobiography. I don't know. You can look it up by Whitley Strieber, and he's kind of the messiah of the abductee community.
Oh.
And the movie documented his sort of coming to terms with his own life and childhood of abduction. And, I didn't know any of that at the time. I was just a little kid. But something about the movie was really striking these really uncomfortable chords with me. Like there was something very true about it. And then it arrived at the scene. Sorry, my cat is fussing around. Mercury, no. Come on, buddy. He's featured in the nightmare, if you see the nightmare.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Anyway, so there's a scene in which the main character, he can't sleep, and he's been awoken by strange sensations, I think, and and he's looking at his at this dresser down at the end of his bed, and out from behind the dresser pokes that prototypical alien head, you know, the big eyes and the thin mouth and all that stuff. And that was the first time I had ever saw something that offered a new frame for my experiences. And I was like, my God, I've seen that, you know, and it was long before that. It was unnervingly similar to my very first memory. So for a long time, I was convinced I was abducted by aliens. For a very long time, I read everything I could about it. You know, growing up, I was very into the paranormal tomes of the time, you know, the Time Life books and stuff that were coming out. And had a couple other experiences that fit that same mold, which kind of furthered that. You know, I saw a couple of UFOs when I was younger, just ships, you know, darting through the night on trajectories that were completely impossible if they were a jet or an airplane or something. And then when I was 9 or 10 years old, I was sleeping and I felt something freezing cold on my foot, like an ice cube, but not wet and not tactile, like nothing physical about it, just a pure cold. And I shot upright in bed, awake and not paralyzed. And I saw, again, this, you know, thin humanoidish thing standing at the foot of my bed, large head, you know, kind of gangly. And I screamed and it ran out the door. And so that kind of further made me believe that I had been abducted. Around that time, I started every night before I'd go to bed, I was convinced that if the aliens were coming for me, that we must have some sort of telepathic bond and maybe they could hear me. And I would just plead with them every night before I went to bed not to abduct me. You know, I would just say, not tonight, not tonight, not tonight, over and over and over again. That was how palpable the fear was. So for a long time, I did think that. But on the flip side, you know, while I was in a state of sleep paralysis and in the house, you know, my parents split when I was 9. So my dad continued living in the same house I'd been, you know, raised in from birth, and my mother moved elsewhere nearby, and I would split time between the two houses. And my father's house remained to me feeling very, very haunted. There were entire rooms that I couldn't even go in, because of the sensations and feelings I would have in those spaces. And when I would fall into sleep paralysis in that house, I would hear frequently hear this man talking to me, who was kind of like an old, disgruntled old man. And he knew my name and he knew all this stuff about me. And he would just tell me really terrifying things like, I think the thing featured in the film, The Nightmare, is that he one time told me that I'd won the gigantic Insect of the Month Club. and that he was sending, a gigantic tarantula up in my bedroom.
Worst club of all time.
At that very moment. Yeah. And, so there was a crossover between, you know, haunting and aliens over here and what is it?
It
served to be a bit of a bridge between different ideologies of the paranormal.
And it almost seems like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like sleep paralysis at a young age almost seems like aliens or something is just priming the pump for what is to come the rest of your life. So kind of getting you ready to be susceptible to an abduction or whatever. It almost seems like the very early stages is the sleep paralysis. It's just getting you ready for what is to come. Do you think that's an accurate description, or do you think it's just part of the whole experience?
I think to a degree. I think on its own, sleep paralysis is I think it's interesting because, you know, in the New Age community, they've devised all sorts of methods that they think provide them with a window to the spirit world, and so to speak. They're all sort of a voluntary methods. I don't really mess with them personally because, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff in that world, and and I just don't really need any more, at least right now. But sleep paralysis is kind of like a non-voluntary method of interacting. So while it was for me a kind of beginning, it continued throughout most of my life. It's since calmed down a lot, as I have sort of learned a lot of methods to mediate it. The past 3 years have seen the least amount I've ever had. But until that point, I would get it, you know, 2-3 times a week. And what started happening is that depending on the location I was in, the experience would change. And I would hear different voices of sort of different spirits. I would sometimes see different spirits, different entities, depending on the space I was in, and have these very vivid experiences with them. Like, for example, I one time was living in Brooklyn, New York, and the heating in my loft was broken. When I would sleep in my loft, I would see this this black man, this like African-American man, who was very disgruntled, and he couldn't really communicate. That was one of the things with a lot of these entities, is that they couldn't speak, really. They couldn't just talk to you. And when they did talk to you, it would just be like, garbledy nothing, like they couldn't express themselves. So the heater was broken. So then I went to a friend's place and I crashed on her couch. And there, when I went to sleep, I woke up with sleep paralysis, and I was stuck in it for what seemed like hours, as this guy, I can't remember what his name was, it was like something like Reginald or something, just babbled at me. But it was very powerful sleep paralysis, and I couldn't get out of it. So it would vary by location, and then in that specific location, were I to be there again, I would only experience those same entities, so to speak.
How were you able to understand his name?
He, like, some of them would be somewhat legible. Like, it would vary. Some of the spirits and entities were completely unable to speak.
Okay.
Some of them could, like, speak, but it was so simplistic. Like in a bedroom I had in Boston, it was this woman who talked kind of like a baby and would sing these songs. You know, this guy Reginald, whatever his name was, he couldn't necessarily articulate a full sentence, but he could like say a few words, like, "Oh, my name's blah, blah, blah." And then he would just sort of repeat himself about, you know, his day to day life. I think he's like a plumber or something. Wow. The difference becomes when, like, the thing that was in my house growing up in my bedroom was totally articulate, could speak in full sentences, knew my name, and also knew what I was afraid of. And when I was in my 20s and started returning to that house, or actually it was in my teens that I started seeing something else in that house. And I just saw it a couple times, but it was this black amorphous thing, and it was completely removed from sleep paralysis. But I would be in my bedroom and I'd just be sitting there reading or something. I was a huge slacker in high school. So, you know, I'd be reading, you know, Middlemarch the day that before I had to have a report on it or something. It was a mess. So I'd be up really late, and suddenly I'd be like awash with fear, like out of nowhere. And I wasn't afraid of anything. It wasn't like when you're a kid and you hear a creepy sound, or you see like a medical bracelet on the ground and you're convinced it's part of some conspiracy or something. It was just this fear with no attachments, and a terrifying fear. And about, you know, a few seconds later, into the room floated this black amorphous thing, like a cloud in the shape of a human, in my periphery of my vision. I could not bring myself to look at it. I was too terrified, but I could see it in the periphery of my vision, just sort of lingering there for a period of maybe 15 or 20 minutes before it sort of dissipated. And as it did dissipate or leave the space, the fear itself also went away at the same time.
Hmm. Oh my gosh. Well, first I would like to say that in case we haven't conveyed this yet, this is like the most terrifying thing that I've ever heard happen to someone. We're keeping our cool, but I can only like trying to even just imagine this is just the worst thing ever. But so just to kind of like line up the storyline for this, right? So you, as a kid, originally had this experience where you had sleep paralysis connected with like what you thought kind of later on was aliens. But then as you moved away from your house and kind of started going to other places, it kind of expanded to beyond just aliens to be other things, to where it was almost like a locational thing was what determined your experience. Is that true? Or do you kind of think that they are actually isolated things? Okay.
Yeah.
And so now that there's such a variety in them, how do you kind of like frame that in your mind? Like, it seems pretty easy to say, okay, I was abducted by aliens. That's kind of like a thing everybody understands, but how do you kind of explain it in your mind now that there's just such a wide variety of strange things? Do you like explain them as ghosts now or?
Sure. You know, I was pretty confused about this for a really long time. And a lot of my life is spent trying to find a frame, just like what you're saying. I now kind of, I don't believe in aliens. I don't think they're from far away from the world. I think that what people experienced and what I experienced were best termed as sort of entities, not spirits, not ghosts. Those things being residues of other people. So, you know, I've experienced a lot of those. Those were like the voices. You know, like, so to give one more example of like what a ghost is, I'm crashing for a couple months with a friend of mine here in Los Angeles, where I live now, before I had settled in. And her place was haunted. I knew it. She knew it. She had a spare room that was her quote unquote office, but she never worked in there and no one liked going in there and she didn't like going in there. And there was a really good reason for that, because it was sort of the epicenter of some really unsettled kind of traumatic spiritual energy. Unfortunately, that was my bedroom where I was sleeping. And I only had one really vivid experience in that room, because she had a boyfriend at the time. So I would usually just be like run out of there and crash in her bed, because she would be away. And so one night I was in there and I was stuck in there, and I woke up in sleep paralysis and the door just blew open. That was down at my feet, you know, sleeping on an air mattress on the floor. And this young girl, maybe 15 or 16, just shrieked at the top of her lungs, "No more cheerleading outfits."
What?
And, just terrifying. Like, and the impression I got was it was sort of a, you know, coming of age kind of girl who was being suppressed by a father figure or a man in the household. And hers was the energy that was really pervasive in that space. And I'd feel kind of flitting around, because I could always kind of identify it as a female, a young girl, but that was the first time I had experienced it. So that's like a residue of like traumatic experience. I don't even necessarily think that that girl's dead or anything. I don't think that a ghost is only the result of someone dying in a space, or that their soul has now released from their body and is locked to the world. I mean, maybe there are cases where that is, but I also think it can just be a specific residue of experience or something.
Okay, I gotcha.
So that's a ghost. An entity is something that's a little bit different and a little more intelligent. So an entity would be like that black amorphous thing, which I experienced a few other times and actually got in a dialogue with in Chicago, Illinois, while I was staying with a girlfriend's parents. She also had one of those things, which I guess I would term as something demonic, living in her house. And I got in a dialogue with it that I actually don't really remember that well. It was telepathic. These things couldn't speak. They pass information to you through impressions. The only way that they could speak was in, like, in the case of the house I grew up in, where I heard this old man talking to me and he knew my name and all that stuff. And in that case, what I think was happening is that you had here a spiritual residue and over here an entity. And together in that space, being two sort of spiritual environmental energies, could kind of combine into a semi-cognizant creature, or rather the demonic negative entity could use the spiritual residue, like the ghost, as a puppet in a way, like a ventriloquist doll or something, and could use its voice and shape to voice its own concerns. And if and I've read a ton about hauntings and demons and all this stuff, and I see this pattern everywhere, you know. So there's that. That would be kind of the distinction between what an entity is and what a ghost is, I suppose.
So a demon would be an example of an entity?
Yeah, a demon would be an entity.
I gotcha.
What is it? In Dion Fortune, her book, Spiritual Self-Defense, which is a good book that doesn't necessarily give you a lot of tools of spiritual self-defense, but it is an interesting book. Yeah, she refers to them as non-human entities is what she calls them. Okay. And in the mythological record, these were things like changelings or vampires or werewolves, green men. You know, we have ghosts in our past, but if you look at our mythological cycle in more pagan times or even early Christian times, we also had these other more intelligent things, angels, devils, things. So, yeah.
Do you think that for the most part, the non-human entities that interact with people, including yourself, are evil, or have you had good interactions with non-human entities?
Sure. I've had neutral, I've had evil, I've had good. I don't think that they have any kind of motives or a logic like we do. That said, the negative, more quote-unquote, you know, sort of evil or quote-unquote demonic energies do seem like they're trying to destabilize you. And actually, in the book, I just listened to it on tape. It's called The Demonologist, and it's about Ed and Lorraine Warren. Are you guys familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great book. But, you know, they talk about demonic oppression and all these things. And I think that that's actually definitely a thing. Neutral would be more like what I experienced as a baby when I had these things tickling me. And I think that when most people experience alien abductions, it's a much more neutral entity. I don't even really know how to explain them or what they're doing. But they don't seem to be trying to hurt you, but they're also not trying to benefit you. They're just kind of there on their own accord. The one positive entity I've encountered was in the Bay of Fundy, which is north of Maine on the coast of Canada. My dad owns a kind of rustic camp on an island there, and I was there with a girlfriend, and we were out in the woods, and it was around dusk, and she was kind of a wild thing kind of girl, a little crazy, unhinged. She would do things like, I was living in Brooklyn at the time, and we were just visiting this camp, but she would, you know, cross incredibly busy intersections with her eyes closed and say the spirits were guiding her and stuff. She was definitely having problems. But you know, I just, by virtue of my experiences all over my life, I could definitely relate and sympathize. So we definitely got along for sure. Mm-hmm. So we're out in the woods and she says, oh, we should be receptive. And we just gathered all these, smooth pebbles from a pebble beach, nearby, and we'd spread them out in a circle, and we just kind of sat there in a sort of meditative state. She had her eyes closed, I had my eyes open. And after about 5 or 10 minutes, she just whispers, she's coming. And as soon as she says that, I look out in the distance of this thick, gnarled, brambly forest, and I see this semi-translucent, sort of undulating blue form, and it's slowly approaching. I'm not afraid, and actually quite the opposite. It has a very calming effect, and it approaches through the woods. It takes it maybe 2 minutes to come up, and then it's standing not 5 feet away from me. And as it's kind of standing there, it's sort of, it's not inert. It continues to sort of undulate. It's got a head now, you know, kind of you can make out a head and a sort of anthropomorphic form. And my girlfriend at the time is like giggling, and I'm asking her what's so funny. And she's saying that this woman is telling her things, but of course she has her eyes closed. She's just listening. So she can't see any of this. And then after she's giggling for a while, she lets out a really loud laugh. And right when she lets out this laugh, the blue woman, for lack of a better way to describe her, her head expands like a balloon, like someone just blew up a balloon. Yes. And it pops in the air. And she's like laughing. And I see that happen. And right after I see it happen, she exclaims that, and still with her eyes closed, she exclaims that her head just became gigantic. And then sometime later, she tells me like, oh, she wants to talk to you. And I hadn't heard anything from her, but, not yet. She said first that she wanted me to not be concerned about the demons that were behind me. And I turned around and I saw from out and beyond in the forest, these red faces sort of expand briefly from the darkness. And their faces matched the profile of those things that had tickled me when I was younger, but they were red.
Static?
Yeah. Well, not static this time. It was almost like a light, like a lens flare, but sustained and shaped. And I turned back around towards her, and that's when she communicated to me. And again, nonverbal, it was purely telepathic. And she told me that that fear empowers these things. It's sort of the energy that demons thrive off of. And also, you know, from my own experiences, not just demons, but people who are more pathological, thrive off your fear. It only emboldens and strengthens them. So that's both in the spiritual world and the physical world. And so she said, you know, don't be afraid, as it, you know, will keep them weak. And then shortly thereafter, she receded back into the woods, undulating back and then slowly fading away.
As she would.
Yeah.
That was the weirdest story I've ever heard in my life.
That's what I'm talking about.
Hey, so one thing that I just, like, why you? Like, why not Dave? Why not me? Why is it you that continues to have sleep paralysis in apparently tons of different states? It doesn't matter where you go.
Yeah.
It's just following you. So why you?
You know, I ask that a lot, and I'm really not sure. I think in a lot of ways it was just sort of a, I was just in the right place at the right time.
The crib.
Yeah, the crib. I was in this perfect little, you know, room, haunted, demonic, like all these things. And definitely a more sensitive person. And my mom's the same way. She's also, intuitive, you know, mildly psychic and, you know, was Wiccan. For most of my childhood. So, you know, that might have had something to do with it too. I don't know.
Open it up. Well, and so also you mentioned this earlier. I wanted to get back to it. But do you think that your sleep paralysis is what induces, like, being able to see these things? Or do you think it's the reverse where these things are causing you to have sleep paralysis? Do you find it that you like first enter that state, or that's what makes you sensitive, and then these are happening to everybody, but you just happen to be sensitive to it? Or do you think that this is kind of a result of you being attacked by these things?
Yeah, it's more the second. You know, it's being in that space puts me in that state. But, you know, I don't need to be in that state to know that a place is haunted.
Right.
You know, that's something I can sense and see, you know, whether I'm, you know, whether it's daytime, nighttime, or whatever.
Right. And like you said, some people are attempt, like they want to become sensitive, or they try and learn how to get into a paralysis state so that they can experience these things, which is what I was going to also ask. What are things that you do to like get away? Because you said that you've kind of already had your fair share of these experiences, so you are now kind of trying to limit them. What do you do to try and keep it from happening? Because I actually know other people that have kind of a not, I guess, extensive version of it as you, but they have like woken up and they can't move or whatever. I've had like two different people when I was telling them about this interview, they were telling me, oh, I've had that kind of a thing. And I told them, I'm sure it wasn't the same scale based on what we had read about you, but
right.
what do you do to try and prevent that from happening? Like, what are some things that you said that you've done to limit it from the three times a week to less than that?
Yeah. So it's, there's a couple tricks. The first trick I learned was how to get out of it. And that one's kind of hard to describe. It's because you can't move, but you have to move to get out of it. Because, you know, scientifically, I guess, you know, what's going on is that, you know, when you go to sleep and you dream, your brain actually paralyzes your body to prevent you from acting out your dreams. And so sleepwalking is that process isn't working when you sleepwalk or have night terrors or something. Mm-hmm. So sleep paralysis is kind of the opposite, where when you wake up, that process is still in effect. Hmm. So your body is paralyzed, and what you have to do is get your body to move. And so I kind of figured out how to roll out of it. It's kind of like if you're all tied up and somebody's got you on a floor and you're like, how do I escape or move? You know, you have to roll. So I figured out how to roll, and then once I figured that out, I could just sort of roll right out of it. So that was number one.
Physical. Yeah. It's a very physical thing rather than, I would have actually guessed mental, but that's an actual physical thing you have to do to kind of get out of it, huh?
That's what works for me anyway. I mean, I think a lot of people who experience it are different, but that's what worked for me. The second thing that I realized is that, kind of in touching on what you asked before about whether sleep paralysis causes me to have these experiences or, you know, ghosts or whatever, for lack of a better word, are causing the sleep paralysis. And one of the main reasons I believe it to be the latter is that I started realizing that if I were to not, and this is another kind of abstract thing, as all things paranormal and spiritual are, is that if I am in a space and I don't interact with it on that kind of spiritual level, I'm much less likely to have sleep paralysis experiences or any other kind of haunting experiences. It's like if I ask for it or put myself in a certain frame of mind, I can see all the spirits and I can have all the experiences. But if I don't do that, I won't have any, pretty much. And so what I started doing in my late 20s is I decided that wherever I'm living, you know, so this is my bedroom, like I'm in my bedroom right now, I'm not going to try and spiritually engage with this space, period, because I need to have peace here, you know? And what I found is that when I don't engage, I don't have it. You know, sometimes I want to have it. I don't know why, just for experience, I guess. And then I will engage, and then it's pretty likely I'll have it. And even just talking about it right now, increases the likelihood that tonight I will have it.
Don't think about an apple.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, that made me confused when you said the apple.
I guess you know it's the classic thing, like you can't not think about the thing.
I got it after you said it. Forrest, one thing before we move on to just talking about your projects.
Oh, sure.
I got to ask this because we are a skeptics podcast. So
Yeah.
By nature, we're trying to figure out like why this is happening. So are there any other possibilities of what this could be. Like, is it possible that it's just a really real dream? Or is it possible that, I don't know, is there any other possibility that it's not a ghost in front of you or whatever? Like, are there any other things that it could be?
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I would love it.
I'm just joking here. you'd like that one. Actually, recently, a couple months ago, there was a, you know, Rodney, the director of the movie, The Nightmare, he lives out here. So there was a panel discussion about the movie following a screening at the, what's it called? Like the Skeptic Society. They put out Skeptical Inquirer magazine. And so he asked me to be on the panel and I was like, yeah, for sure. I mean, I always like talking to people of all sorts of, frames of mind. And so on that panel was actually, you know, the guy who's written the book about sleep paralysis from a scientific standpoint. There really is so little research about it that it's kind of almost criminal. But he's written, you know, the most sort of from a psychiatric perspective, you know, the scientific book. And what they all say is it's called hypnagogia or hypnagogic hallucinations, which I think are
easy for you to say.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you know, honestly, man, I wish I could tell you that everything was okay, but I can't, I guess in like, so the idea is it's hypnagogic and oh, you had these shared experiences with other people. Oh, well, that's just chance and stuff. So from a skeptical standpoint, there is fuel, but the argument is very, very thin at this point. If they decided to do more research about it, you know, maybe there would be more information. But for the time being, it's kind of like, well, you, your body is going through this process of paralyzing itself so you don't act out your dreams, and for some reason you hallucinate. And hallucination is kind of like the key word in a lot of skeptical arguments against experiences that are paranormal. But the question then always begs to me, like, well, what drives a hallucination and what information are you processing to create that hallucination, especially if it's so divorced from your own experiences? So that's what they say, hypnagogic hallucinations. So if you're looking for the easy way out, there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, you tell stories about when you were in your crib and when you were a kid, like, I don't like hypnosis or not hypnosis, but those type of images, I feel like.
Brian can't say it.
I'm not even going to try. The word that you said, I feel like it would make sense for an adult, but for a baby who's not even able to fully function and think through that, like, that doesn't seem like a great argument for that. And it's clearly a part of your story, and I have no reason to believe that you would make that up. So, I don't know. It's difficult to fully wrap my mind around it.
I mean, and it's actually, you know, I tried atheism for a while in my teens. I gave it a go. But at the end of the day, what?
I said, as we all do.
Yeah. You got it. You got to give it a go. I gave it a try, but it was really just because of the breadth of my own experience that the argument wouldn't hold. It was like denying a massive amount of what had happened to me growing up and even what was still happening to me. So it's like, at least for me, I've always grown up with that perspective. But it's, you know, all by the benefit of experience, you know.
Yeah. Do you claim a specific faith now?
No, not necessarily. I don't know. I dabble in sort of Gnostic Christianity sometimes. More into the Western esoteric belief systems than the East. But, yeah, not so much. If I were, you know, I actually got surveyed, really weird phone survey. It was like 40 minutes long, but I was just bored and I was so fascinated. And it was all about like religion in America and asking me if Halloween was like a sacrilegious holiday and stuff. And I was like, how did you get my number? Why are you asking me these questions? But they wanted to know what I told them. Quaker, because when I do go to any kind of service, I go to Quaker. Service.
Well, there you go. Interesting. Before we let you go, you've brought up the nightmare a lot. We don't want to leave without talking a little bit about the nightmare. So tell us what the nightmare is, how people can watch it, and all that good stuff.
I think it's still on Netflix.
Last I heard it was, but...
Yeah. The Nightmare is a documentary by Rodney Asher. He made Room 237 before that, and that was a pretty well-received movie about conspiracy theories relating to The Shining.
Yeah.
The film The Shining.
It's weird, man.
It's a weird movie. It's a good one.
I love that movie.
The Nightmare is his sort of second feature-length film, and it basically follows, I think there's 8 of us subjects who have sleep paralysis, and it's purely subjective. There's no scientists or anything. It's all first-person accounts. And then he crafted these really brilliant reenactments of the experiences. So it's sort of like a hybrid horror documentary, a little bit of both.
Yeah. Great.
But I liked it a lot. I mean, I work in film, and I thought it was a really great movie.
Yeah, you work in film. It says you're currently working on a film about something that happened to you in Brooklyn, where Dave's from.
Yeah, I'm actually sitting in. I mean, I'm sure you know where, since you lived in Brooklyn, but I'm sitting in Clinton Hill right now.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't spend a lot of time there, but I know where you're talking about. I mean, it's unrelated. It's a very long-winded story, so I'll just give you the teaser version. But
maybe we'll have you back on again sometime too, as well, to maybe catch this one out. That'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway, when I was 26 years old, I was kidnapped by a guy in Greenpoint, and held for a couple hours, and. He was sort of taking me back to his neighborhood to kill me, but I ended up getting him to like me. And even after a failed escape attempt, he ended up letting me go. But it was quite an odyssey. And so I'm making a about that experience, and I'm going to try and track him down with the help of some private investigators, hopefully.
You know, if you can't beat them, join them, you know.
Right.
Or get them to join you is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's just I think that we should maybe arrange another situation, because I think that would be super interesting to hear about.
That's a scary story too, but it's pretty different.
For sure.
It's definitely scary though. It's just scary.
Yeah. And speaking of scary, I was on your Facebook page. See, you're very into the politics.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
And a big Bernie guy.
Yeah.
It appears.
Yeah.
Not a great night for Bernie.
I know. I'd be following the returns right now, but instead of talking to you guys.
Well, you're not missing much, man. But
born and raised in Vermont, it was my solemn duty.
at least he won his own state.
Yeah. Well, you got to give him that, you know. And for all he's done, I mean, I'm shocked he's made it as far as he has, honestly.
Yeah. Well, he seems like a guy who I would want to hang out with. So he's got that going.
He's a good dude.
Absolutely. Well, Forrest, thank you so much. How can people, if people want to reach out to you, learn more about your story, follow along with your movie that you might be creating, how can people find you?
Well, you can throw my email if you want in the episode description or something.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That'd probably be the best way, because, you know, people have tried to reach out to me on Facebook, but you know, if you're not connected to that person, their message gets buried and you don't even find it till like 2 years later. So, right. You just throw my email in there. I don't care.
Cool. Sounds good, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Oh, we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We love that story. And we will use that email address to try and get a hold of you again, maybe do another episode sometime to get you on here to kind of tell a story.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Thanks, man. Man, Dave, how great was Forrest?
Oh, man. I honestly kind of wish he still lived in Brooklyn, because I would ask that guy to go get a beer with me, because he would have all the stories to tell.
Now, here's a question, Dave. We are we're skeptics. I don't know if you've caught on to that.
Yeah, I haven't caught on to my own skepticism yet.
Well, you haven't reviewed your own podcast, so...
Brandon, this isn't about me. This is about Forrest, okay?
Right. So here's my question about your skepticism. Mm-hmm. Where are you at with Forrest? I mean, you can't say that all of his stories are lies.
No, absolutely not. Brandon, here's the thing that we've been talking a lot about defining our skepticism. I am 100% sure that at least, I'm not going to say all, but at least some of the stories that we hear on this show are as real as can be to the people saying them. I'm sure there are some people lying, but for the majority of the people that I hear tell these stories, I'm not going to just say that they're lying. So the question
just to recap, Dave.
Yeah.
We've had people talk about abduction. We've had people mm-hmm. talk about out-of-body experiences. We've had people talk about aliens showing up at a convention. We've had people talk about a demonic presence haunting their house for years. We've had someone talk about a ghost living inside of their wardrobe. Those are the type of people that you're saying, and the type of stories. I shouldn't say type of people, but the type of stories that you are saying are real.
Right. And here's the thing. Like, a lot of these things skirt the lines, and today was a perfect example of that, skirt the line between being awake and being asleep. And so that, for me, is the biggest, hard thing for me to grapple with, just because there is such a simple explanation right there that you are merely having a very vivid dream or, you know, like lucid dreaming. So that's where it's tough for me to be able to make the leap, like, that it's just a coincidence that right at the point that you're most susceptible to surreal dreaming is when a actual real crazy thing happens. That being said, the thing about his story is he started getting into, like, you know, it wasn't just when he was sleeping, like, he started having these other experiences. So I don't know whether you could chalk that up as just an extension of that dreaming, or maybe just like an alternative type of, like, hallucinating. I don't know. But I would absolutely 100% say that he experienced those things as if they were real. And I just really, that's why it comes down to it, Brandon. We just need to experience these things, because until I see it happening, I mean, like, it's just hard to, just hard. And that you asked this question in an interview, like, why is it him? I don't know how that's
like, why isn't it me? Why isn't it you?
I asked that question about a lot of things, but this is absolutely one of those things.
Yeah, usually about nothing. Hey, Dave.
Huh?
We have a lot of great interviews coming up on the Star Time podcast. We're going to be talking about some aliens the next couple weeks. We're going to be hearing some EVPs later on, I believe next month. We're going to be talking about Flat Earth. Yeah, Flat Earth and the Truman Show. All great interviews are coming up on the Star Time podcast. Remember, every Wednesday, a new interview for you guys. But don't worry, there's more. Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, start your morning off right with the Star Time news while you commute to work. Get your brain filled. A breakfast for your brain in regards to the paranormal.
And here's a little preview. Tomorrow, we're talking about zombies.
Oh, that's exciting.
Just because zombies and bees aren't exciting enough on their own.
You are exactly right. So, hey, Dave, from my family to yours, can I say this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thankful for your friendship, and I'm even more thankful that you would hang out with me tonight.
Bran, I hope it's not the last.
Ugh, it won't be.
Ugh.
From Greenville, South Carolina.
And Brooklyn, New York. It's the Starry Time Podcast.
Starry Time Podcast.
Dave Brandon.
With Brandon.